Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for August 22nd. Welcome, Catherine.
Hello, welcome from Atlanta.
Yes, and welcome, Tim.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, well, I was going to tell y'all a little story. If our listeners are as demanding as my daughter, we're in great shape. She just came in the house a little bit ago, and I said, "Did you have a good time?" Because she'd been once in the house. She said, "Oh, I had a great time." And I said, "What'd you do?" And she said, "Nothing." So, I mean, if we can give the people nothing and they still like it, we're in great shape.
That's like Seinfeld.
Yeah, I mean, we could give them a little more, but I think we will because we'll have a guest coming on, Stephen from the Daily Kingfish, and he's going to talk about Louisiana politics and a little bit about Florida politics because apparently Stephen's been working in some Florida politics too. He'll come around 7:20. But until then, we got a host of topics, and I thought we'd kind of start off in Alabama. We got two stories out of Alabama. One's a poll on the governor's race that was pretty interesting, and then we have Dot. Tim, what do you think we should start off with, the poll or Dot?
Oh, let's talk about Dot by all means.
Let's talk about Dot. Well, we're talking about Congresswoman Dorothy Dot, and I've forgotten Dot's name, but I mean, she's
Davidson.
Davidson. Oh, I thought she was his wife after I saw that picture. I mean, I thought it was Saban, but it's apparently Davidson. But Dot's campaign manager decides that it would be awesome if they had the endorsement of University of Alabama Crimson Tide coach Nick Saban. So he could have gone and actually gotten the endorsement, or tried to get the endorsement, something like that, but he just decided it would be a whole lot easier to use Photoshop. So he took a picture of Dot, which was obviously taken indoors, and then posted it over Nick Saban's wife in a picture with an outdoor setting, and it was pretty bad Photoshop. And, of course, this received pretty much national attention, both in the political and sports world. Catherine, what do you think about this?
Well, it's just so ridiculous. Like, did the guy really think he was going to get away with it? I mean, it's hard to even talk about because it's so ridiculous.
I mean, if you haven't seen this photo, apparently you don't search Dorothy Dot Davidson. You'll get pictures of Nick Saban. But if you will search Nick Saban, you might get a picture of Dorothy and him for some reason. It's kind of weird because I wanted to see the original photo in Google but couldn't. Tim, what did you make of this one? Did you see this photo before I sent it to you or when I sent it to you?
Now, I'd already seen it because it got popular in a hurry, David, as you might guess. This poor guy, what was really bad is they, you know, the TV crews catch this campaign manager on the street, they interview him, and he looks like, you know, the proverbial deer in the headlights and, you know, oh, I just made the whole thing up. Oh, do you think? I mean, this poor woman running for mayor over there. He comes busting into her headquarters and he says, "We got Nick Saban on our and of course it just thrilled everyone and then this crazy I can't do it justice. People are going to have to go online. Listeners, you got to go online. You've got to see this picture. It's a classic in a year full of classics, right, David?"
Oh, yeah, and they say a picture's worth 1,000 words. When you see this one, give it 3,000.
There are no words.
But, you know, my biggest problem with it is, you know, Nick Saban, he's won, like, one national championship at Alabama. You know, if I'm this fella, I just go all the way. I put a picture of Dot and Bear Bryant. And, you know, I just get endorsed for the grave. It's about as believable as this terrible photo. So, It was one that, you know, hey, he got our national headlines, and I don't think the mayor's race of Bessemer, Alabama, typically gets that kind of attention. So I guess that was achieved. But staying in Alabama, a little higher, because I don't know how the Bessemer, Alabama mayor's race is going, but we can't give a real critical analysis based on that one incident. But they did have some Rasmussen poll, including a Alabama governor's race one, and it shows Ron Parks 24 points down. Robert Bentley's at 58%. I thought Sparks might have a chance, but this poll doesn't look good.
No, Tim, it doesn't.
Tim?
Yeah, I'd be almost willing to say that this race is likely over. Looking at the last four Rasmussen polls beginning in May, you go from a 13-point lead to a 19-point lead to a 20-point lead to a 24-point lead. Well, the wrong kind of a trend is set in there.
Yeah, exactly.
And I hate to tell Ron Sparks, but this coupled with the new Senate poll over there that shows a 32-point gap, I think the writing's on the wall for that race, David. I think so.
And that's pretty bad because, I mean, you got to think about it. Ron Sparks is one of their big stars in Alabama Democratic politics. Artur Davis, who was one of their stars, also ran for the seat. He wouldn't have probably had a lot different numbers. They were both going for the seat like it was so winnable. And it's 4 points different than a U.S. Senate race against a multi-term incumbent Republican versus a guy that has nowhere near the funding of name recognition as Ron Sparks. I mean, there's no difference in those races almost. Catherine, your thoughts?
Well, it looks to me, looking at the other questions in the Rasmussen poll, that it's all about the way people are feeling about the national leadership, about President Obama, and about, you know, he has very low approval ratings among those surveyed. So, I mean, I think it's a coattails thing, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, it's like if you just looked at if you added up the strongly approved and somewhat approved, 37% president and 55% strongly disapproved, man, those numbers are upside down. I mean, there's almost a 20-point divide between two numbers added together and, you know, just the strongly disapproved. Pretty much it's funny that the somewhat in each way is like single digits. It's no
Let me ask you guys something. Is it something even more? Are we looking at Alabama now perhaps as at least in statewide and federal races, as perhaps being the most Republican state in the South? Could it make that claim now?
And looking at these numbers, I think it may have passed South Carolina.
I do, too. I just wondered if anybody beside me thought that. What do you think, Catherine?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it'll be interesting to see what actually happens on Election Day. If, you know, I think a lot depends on what happens between now and then. But, yeah, it's looking that way. But at least it's not Georgia.
Yeah, which I guess Catherine did a pretty good segue into Georgia. A little bit of news in Georgia. There's a new poll out that shows it about a 4-point race. Much, much more competitive, both candidates under 40. I guess it's an insider advantage poll. It has Nathan Deal at 45, Roy Barnes at 41. That, I think, people on just looking at it think it's a little more accurate, I believe. Catherine, what do you think?
I think it's a little more accurate, and I think, I mean, if Roy plays this right, and he seems to be doing a pretty good job, actually, I think he could improve those numbers.
Tim?
You know, Matt Towery, this is his poll. Lately, he's been nailing these things on Election Day. The only question I got is he's got the Libertarian in this race with 5%. No Libertarian's going to get that number. No Libertarian ever has. We see these polls where it'll show third-party candidates with 5 to 10% of the vote, And maybe the voters are responding to the pollster that day, but when they get to the polls and they get ready to push the button, some of them have buyer's remorse and they say, you know what, I don't want to throw my vote away. I'm going to vote for one of the major party candidates. And so the third party candidate never gets that kind of vote in Georgia. I'd be stunned if a Libertarian candidate got 3% this year. That's my only question about that poll.
The only thing is, Libertarians in Georgia, pretty much if you're a Republican and you're kind of angry at Nathan Deal for whatever reason or angry at Georgia Republicans, it's a way you can send a message without having the fear of electing a Democrat. Because it seems like Libertarians, what they do for I don't know how many times in recent history, they've been able to just to throw the thing into a runoff in which Republicans are undefeated in these runoffs. I don't believe we've ever won one of these runoffs, be it PSC, governor, Senate.
That's because Republican voters in Georgia have a history of going back to the polls. Democratic voters don't do that. If there was ever a finer example of it, I mean, we saw it 2 years ago in the U.S. Senate race, right?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, for whatever reason, it's like that way they know they can safely send a message, because the trick is Roy Barnes in these polls has been at 41 and 42%. And if the race is close or there's a divide, it's all on the Republican number. It's not like Roy Barnes goes up from 42. He didn't go below 40. I mean, it's just right there. There's no movement. Any explanation for that, Catherine?
Well, I how I am. I think that a lot of voters decide, you know, a week before they vote. So, like I say, you know, I think Roy has to do all the right things between now and Election Day to get his numbers up. As far as the Libertarian, I think the Libertarian, I don't know if they'll get 5%, but I think they might show a little better this year, because I think there's a lot of division in the Republican Party. I think there's a lot of people who were handle people who maybe won't vote for Nathan Deal but don't really want to vote for Roy Barnes, but they want to vote, and they may vote for that Libertarian.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
Dave,
and then knowing it safely, but how high
you know,
get, I think under 5 or somewhere. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, David, 37% of Georgia voters say they're Democrats, 33% say they're Republicans, and 30% say they're independent voters. And independent voters in Georgia tend to tack to the right on most of the issues. That's where Governor Barnes is going to have trouble budging off of that 41-42% that he seems to be sitting at. He's going to have some independent votes, of course, to win. And I'm not real sure how he's going to get them. It seems this race already is kind of just settled a little bit from the excitement of the primaries. And you wonder if there's a ceiling that Governor Barnes can't overcome.
You know, people have said that, and some of those were people that had dogs in other races, that Roy Barnes had a ceiling, but the polling never shows him above that ceiling. I sure hope he breaks through that by November, but at this point it hadn't happened. I think a lot of this may also drive his ad strategy, because we've seen another ad that's kind of a negative ad on Nathan Deal. It also has the tech-based theme to it, and I think a lot of that may be trying to make sure Nathan Deal never gets above 50, so Roy Barnes can use that to raise money and continue to pump in ads. On what that ad strategy is about.
You're referring to the ad known as Hiding, is that right?
Yeah, it's on another computer screen ad. That's fine for a few of those. I think eventually Roy Barnes then has to, at the same time, I believe, build himself up, because, you know, while if he can hold Nathan Deal to 45 for the next 2 months, wonderful, but if he never raises himself up any, then where does that get us in the end? So he does have to have some kind of strength, and I'm sure they do, to lift himself up. But, you know, we'll just see it throughout the ads. And Nathan Deal, I believe, since he's won the nomination, has not gone on the air. Do I stand correct, or do y'all know of ads that I don't
Well, the Republican Governors Association has gone on the air with an ad. They hit Barnes. And, of course, they tied him immediately to Obama, saying Obama is running all over the country apologizing, while Barnes is running all over the state apologizing for his former term. So it was a pretty hard-hitting thing.
I didn't think it was very effective, though. I thought it was kind of weak. I mean, it was.
I
didn't like it. It was a little too rambly.
I mean, Roy Barnes did go on apology tour. It seemed like it was at least 6 months ago. But then I'm not sure, when did the president go on this big apology tour? I've missed that one. But
they always say
he's apologizing for America. Like that's what they always say.
One of the cute things
they're saying is Obama is apologizing in Cairo, Egypt, and Roy Barnes is apologizing in Cairo, Georgia. You know, so
Isn't that clever?
They've even thrown up a site, guys, called RoyBama.com.
Oh my God!
And its purpose is to chronicle. Its purpose is to chronicle the Obama Barnes apology tour. See, every chance they get, you see what they're going to do now. Every chance they get, put Obama and Barnes' names together. That's their plan. Or I think it is.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess we'll need that somebody can search for RoyBama.com or whatever it is, .org. But is that put out by the RGA, or is that just some yahoo put this site together?
You know, I'm not really.
Class for a national committee that's, I guess seemingly wants a little class to it. That's just me, but who knows? I know that political discourse has begun to take a nosedive. Well, I guess one more thing on this topic. Who's the incumbent? The Republicans have been in power for 8 years, but Nathan Deal was in Washington. Roy Barnes hadn't been in power in 8 years, but he's been governor before. Who is seen as the incumbent in this race? Catherine,
unfortunately, I think it's Roy.
Yeah,
you agree. He's the incumbent. And you agree, Tip. Well, see, the bad news about that then is they say a lot of times the undecideds on election day break somewhere between 2-1 for the challenger to even 3-1 for the challenger. So if you're behind 4 points, that's bad math any way you cut it. So if he's seen as the incumbent, that's just not a good situation for him.
David, at the bottom of this slide, it says paid for by the RGA Georgia 2010 PAC, not authorized by any candidate, blah, blah, blah. So the Republican Governors Association is funding this.
They have a ton of money.
No problem with tax sites, but RoyBama.com just sounds real tacky. I don't know, just something about that whole scheme. But I guess that they see that is something that polled well, no matter how flimsy it might be. Staying in Georgia. Oh, go ahead, Tim.
I was just going to say it looks like something like this would go out better in the direct mail to the type of voter that they're trying to attract, because the computer savvy people who would be looking these things up wouldn't be too excited by this site. And when you guys get a chance to look at the site, you'll understand why. It's just not technically well done. It looks like some kid did it for a high school assignment or something.
So it's kind of like good work from Dot's campaign manager, right?
It just looks tacky. It does. They can do better now.
The rest of the cycle is going to be pinned back on Dot's campaign manager, at least on this show, probably other shows. Let's see if we can do one more Georgia topic before our guest comes on, and that would be Regina Thomas. She lost in her primary bid for Congress over in East Georgia, but yet she wants to do a write-in campaign. However, Georgia has a sore loser law, saying if you put your name on the ballot one way, you can't then go run another way. is sour grapes. Actually, let's hold that topic.
I believe we've got Stephen calling in from the Daily Kingfish. Welcome, Stephen.
Good evening. How are you guys doing?
Oh, doing good. Glad to have you, Stephen, because it's my understanding that in the next 6 days, pretty much all the southern states will have their primaries held, with Florida on Tuesday and Louisiana on Saturday. And you know a little bit about something about both of them.
Yeah, a little bit about both. I've been paying very close attention to what's going on in Florida, especially in the Senate race. For more than anything, for curiosity's sake, because that's going to be a popcorn popper, if you ask me. sit back, pop your popcorn, and watch what happens. With this three-way heated race that inevitably they're going to be running towards in November, it'll be interesting to see how things pan out this Tuesday for them.
Yeah, well, I guess since we're on that, let's go ahead and talk Florida first. So I looked at a poll. It looks like Kendrick Meek will be the Democratic nominee. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and in all honesty, I mean, the first polls that came out, they need to go back to Politics 101, whoever did those polls, if you ask me. They polled really poorly. You can't conduct the poll the same way for a general election that you do for a party primary. You just can't. And when you saw their sampling data and who was actually chosen for the poll, you clearly saw right from the beginning that Green was not nearly as high as he was early reported. So Kendrick will do incredibly well, I think, on Tuesday. And then, it'll be running off to November for the Democrats on that side.
Yeah, and then I guess on the Republican side, there's still a primary, but once Charlie Crist ran as independent, that pretty much gave it to Marco Rubio, correct?
Yeah, Rubio's going to be there, and it's interesting, especially after the national gaffes that we saw with some of the more famous Tea Partiers, with Engel in Nevada and Paul up in Kentucky. It was kind of interesting to see that immediately Rubio started taking a bit of a back seat. He wanted to kind of hide a little bit and maybe reformat himself. And so that's exactly what I think happened. And now we'll see a brand new Rubio probably sticking his head out come Wednesday, trying to show that he's more of the mainstream, which I think he's going to have a hard time selling.
Yeah, well, I guess, and then move into the general, though. One thing I see when I look at the polls is it seems the better that the Democratic candidate do, be it Green or Meek, the better they do, the worse Chris does. And could this be a situation where Democrats have to go on the ballot box and say, by me voting for the Democratic candidate, probably Kendrick Meek, I am closer to electing Marco Rubio? Do you see that being a situation where Democrats have to face that choice?
You know, boy, I hope not. You know, I really hope not. It's going to be, you know, as well as I do. I mean, you guys have been around forever as well. And looking at this, the ebbs and the flows that you can take during a primary versus a general are so incredibly different. Sitting here, I'd love to say that my crystal ball will be able to tell me how things are going to end up panning out. But I think come Wednesday, we're going to see talking points come out of Chris. We're going to see talking points come out of Rubio, and we're going to see things coming out of the Meek camp that will hopefully bring this better into focus. Now, if Democrats are actually seeing Meek as not viable, which is what I think that many of them who are maybe outside of the political structure, if they were seeing Meek as not viable, which I think sends I'm sure we can go and debate why that is, but if that's the case, and if that has been the case up until this point, I think that you see a dramatic poll shift come Wednesday. If he comes out of this Democratic primary with the wind at his back and with a 5 to 10 point lead over Green, which is probably going to happen, does that then tell Democrats that, wait a second, we may have a winner on our hands, and they start to dump Crist?
Yeah, and that could be interesting, but then with the three-way race, how low does Rubio have to go to put this race in play for Meek?
Yeah, I think that a very good question. I think that, if Rubio, again, so much can happen. I'm guessing that there are going to be some political landmines that are going to be dropping on Rubio. The good thing is the sites will actually be there for both of the campaigns, the Chris campaign and the Meek campaign, to go after Meek. I mean, I'm sorry, to go after Rubio. So with both of the campaigns looking at Rubio, because both of them need to get his number down, that I think will end up telling a, you know, that I think is where the fight's going to be, and it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. Well, I guess the one of the other races in that area that involves Kendrick Meek would be the race to replace him. Tim, any questions on that congressional race?
Yeah. I just want to know the lay of the land in that race right now. Quite a number of people have jumped in it. Who's going to win that race?
You know, here's one of those interesting things according to our election law throughout the country. The interesting thing is there is no runoff for the primaries there in Florida. So whoever comes out with the most votes actually goes right on to November, and interestingly enough, with that being such a heavily Democratic district, that person in all likelihood will win. I think that Scott Galvin, he is the only Caucasian in that race. He happens to be an openly gay man who's running in that district. I think that he's building the bridges and he's doing the work. It seems that the other four candidates in there, from the reports that I've seen, now granted, I'm looking at this from 5,000 feet up, but I'm being told that there's so much infighting going on right now, and trust me, being from Louisiana, I know about the infighting. That infighting is hurting those other candidates so much, and so far Galvin has pretty much come out unscathed other than having some heinous words and stuff spray painted on his yard signs. I really think that if he has and runs a decent ground game on Tuesday, that he could actually come out victorious there and end up winning with about 23 or 24% of the vote.
That was my next question. You actually think the winner is going to have less than, say, 30%?
I think it's, in all likelihood, it's very possible. I mean, if you look at the numbers and if you look at the other candidates are all coming from certain pockets of support, from what I understand. They all have their little certain pockets and certain neighborhoods and certain churches and stuff that are backing them. With that sort of thing, if those votes are evenly placed there, you could actually see someone going, you know, simply with the plurality of the vote and only garnering, you know, 24-25% of the vote.
Amazing.
Yeah,
thank you, sir. David?
Yeah, and a follow-up on that, Miss Marlene Bastien, who's been on our show before, actually got assaulted at gunpoint, robbed at gunpoint over the past week, which, you know, and that's certainly traumatic for her, and I thought some prayers go out to her, but then it might actually then boost her name ID in some perverse way for the general. So
right.
That was kind of a development that happened.
When things are that close, the littlest thing, right? The littlest thing could tilt that scale. And when you're talking about literally a handful of votes, my goodness, trust me, I'm going to be watching. I mean, I'm going to be glued on Tuesday night to see how things are coming in and where the votes are coming in.
Yeah. Well, I guess then, making sure we cover Louisiana properly, I guess we'll move off of Florida, unless do you know much about the governor's race before we go there? Or is that
No, I don't know much about. I haven't been watching too closely the governor's race in Florida.
Yeah, and it's been kind of a quiet race comparatively because, I mean, I think everybody around the country watches the Senate race, and this congressional race is rather interesting, but the governor's race just doesn't get the headlines, although we do know Democrats are doing better. But let's go ahead and move to Louisiana. My opening question to you, Stephen, was last time we had somebody from the Daily Kingfish on the blog was Ryan. And we know Ryan was just the man on there for years, but then he's moved on, and you and I believe Matt Bailey have taken over.
Right.
Tell us about what's going on with your blog and that transformation.
Okay, the DailyKingfish.com. We are back. Yes, Ryan definitely put his blood, sweat, and tears to get us set up. I consider him a very good friend of mine. He did a lot of amazing work to get us started and get us on the map. And we lost him. You know, he moved out of the state, and he felt in order to do a good job, he needed to kind of pass the baton to somebody else. So Matt Bailey and I have kind of stepped forward to Matt pretty much knows the northern part of the state. I pretty much know the southern part of the state, so it's a pretty good matchup for us to be working together and commenting on what's going on and to try and get progressive voters a place to go for news. And that, I think, is what our primary focus is at the Daily Kingfish.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's go ahead and move to races. Catherine, what do you have on the Senate race?
Yeah, Stephen, you want to tell us a little bit about what you think is happening with the Senate race in Louisiana? It looks to be heating up a little bit.
Yeah, to say the least. Put on your asbestos underwear, folks. This is going to be a bumpy ride. You know, our inevitable shame that we have in David Vitter representing us here in Louisiana, it's interesting to see that right at the last minute he drew a challenger in the Republican primary. This is Chet Taylor. He is the former Chief Justice of the Louisiana Supreme Court. His bona fides in conservative world are quite strong. Especially in the northern part of Louisiana, and Vitter, of course, cannot win unless he carries the north. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there, and are people able to come back to David Vitter after voting against him in a primary? Will Taylor be able to do enough to unseat Vitter? Probably not. Looking at it, you know, he really needed to step forth. He needed to step up. There was a poll released about a week and a half ago that was touting, after you deliver all the negatives on David Vitter, that Chet Taylor was within, like, 15 points. Well, you know, he hasn't done anything to bring up his name recognition, and I'm sorry, but most of the people in the southern Louisiana have never seen that man's name on a ballot, Chet Taylor. So, in all likelihood, David's going to go through, but he's had to spend some money, and he's actually, lost some confidence in Republican voters for obvious reasons.
Huh.
Now, on the Democratic
thing,
go ahead.
Well, that latest thing with his staffer who was traveling back and forth to Louisiana for
court appearances.
Court appearances on the public money. Is that the kind of thing that people in Louisiana care about, or do they really not care? Do they figure that's what politicians do?
Well, there's two sides of it, right? In Louisiana especially, that from what I can see, is there's two sides in the Republican Party. There is the devout religious side, okay, and then there is the fiscal conservative side. Now, here's the issue where with him cheating on his wife and hiring prostitutes, okay, you hit the religious side. Now, you know, you're having the hits coming on the fiscal conservative side, right? Because, you know, here's a guy who is actually paying for one of his staffers who is a four-time convicted person for driving under the influence, okay, and the person who worked for him in charge of women's issues.
Yeah.
That was how he was titled. He is actually ended up plea bargaining in a case where he held his ex-girlfriend at knife point for over 90 minutes and ended up cutting her, and it was really traumatic. So, you know, he's getting hit on both of those sides. And that's what I think is going to be difficult for him to get through. His numbers for women are in the tank for obvious reasons. And, you know, Malasaw, who is the Democratic candidate, in all likelihood will skate right to November after this primary on Saturday, Malasaw has been beating the drum on that. And pointing out all of the foibles that David Vitter has had. And if you check our website, dailykingfish.com, you can see some of the latest ads, which are quite disturbing yet weird and really out there. But it's true. It's based on fact.
Well, I had another question for you. Well,
go ahead.
Do you guys have other questions about the Senate race?
No, go ahead, Catherine.
Well, I have a question, a more general question about Louisiana. I noticed I was reviewing the Daily Kingfish today before in anticipation of talking with you this evening, and I noticed a really quite glowing report of the Louisiana Jefferson Jackson dinner, and there seemed to be some references in there that it was much improved from previous Jefferson Jackson dinners. And I just wondered if there's, is there, you know, new leadership or just new excitement in the Louisiana Democratic Party, and what do you think are, if so, what are the reasons for that?
Very good question. I will, because I do have a little bit of journalistic integrity, I will say that I am an officer of the Louisiana Democratic Party, but I am very proud to say that we do have a new state party chairman. He's a former congressman. His name is Buddy Leach, and he's taken over. We really had some problems in the past, I'd say especially for the last probably 6 years. And that's probably being generous. We've hired a new executive director, and they are really putting a team together. Now, this has all happened within the last several months. So, you know, to rebuild and to bring people back together, it's been kind of tough. And I have to say that I was not crazily optimistic going to this JJ dinner, and I was very impressed. So I'm really hoping that they start rowing in the right direction again, and that they really start listening to the constituents. And that was the problem before. It seemed to be more of a fiefdom for a bunch of individuals than it was to actually mobilize voters and make sure that we get good Democrats elected.
Yeah, I think Ryan had talked about that before when he was on Daily Kingfish. Now, are there? I have a friend who just moved to New Orleans who's a huge Democrat. Was, you know, very involved in Democratic politics here in Georgia. And she said she went to one, she lives in New Orleans, one Democratic Party meeting for that county or whatever. And she said it was a nightmare. Do you think that's going to improve too?
You know, I hope.
Can I give her
Orleans,
some hope?
Yeah, you know what, I really hope so. I can tell you that the elected leaders for the Orleans Parish Democratic Executive Committee, they're the one, New Orleans does, you know, there's the state of New Orleans and then there's the state of Louisiana, okay?
Right.
So, you know, New Orleans always does things just a little bit different. I don't know the numbers exactly, but most parish executive committees go by, and we have parishes, not counties, but
so
you can translate that in your crazy world, which is Louisiana, to real world. But in New Orleans, they have a central committee, their executive committee there, has like 100 members. When in most parishes / counties, we have anywhere from maybe 14, 15 members. So you can imagine how unwieldy that is. To try and govern that body of locally elected Democrats. It's very difficult. I mean, that has more members than some state legislators. So, you know, that is very unwieldy. I'm hoping that with the leadership, they've elected some really good folks to lead that group, and I'm hoping that they can start pulling some of their stuff together locally.
Good. Tim?
Yes, sir. I had a couple of sort of technical questions to ask you. Louisiana was famous for years for its jungle primary system, and now the state has pretty much abandoned that. Why was that done, and who does that help or hurt at the ballot box?
Breaking news. Yes, you're right. We abandoned it for about a year, and it's back. This will be the last election. This is the last election that we will actually have party primaries. We are going back to the craziness that is the open primary or jungle primary, however you refer to it. I'm not looking forward to it. I was, you know, I think that at the end of the day, it hurts the parties. Whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, I think it hurts the parties. Because if you don't have a chance for everyone to come back together, okay, to face, you know, the opponent and actually beat up on the other side and focus your troops, then it actually hurts party building more than anything. And I think that that is one, just one of the things that actually, decimated the Louisiana Democratic Party for the longest time and allowed Republicans to basically eat our lunch. Because for the longest time, and I know you guys have talked about this on your show before, in the South, Democrats ruled the day for the longest time. Okay, and so Republicans, it was very easy for them to unite behind their one candidate, okay, and put everything behind them where we had six or seven Democrats running. Well, now it's quite the opposite, and so it is going to be a struggle. I think that the biggest person that it's going to hurt or the biggest entity is really the parties, and that's going to be on both sides because it's going to cut both ways.
Okay. Now, another thing that's about to happen, some of the pundits are speculating that the results of the census might mean that the state of Louisiana is going to lose a congressional district. Now, get out your crystal ball for me, and if that happens to be the case, which district would it be, do you think, and why?
Sure. I think that if it were done right now, it would be Charlie Malazan's district because he's the only Democrat. I think that that's the district that they would be getting rid of. But inevitably, we will be losing a seat. I think that looking at the data, there's almost no way to prevent it. There could be some last-minute saving grace. There could have been, four extra babies born that pushes us over the line, but it's probably not going to happen. So you're going to have to, we're going to see a lot of horse trading go on. Now, we're still under, I believe, for the federal system as well, we're still under court review. So the courts are still going to have to review what the new lines are that they're going to draw. It'll be interesting. I think that it's obviously going to be in the South. The northern part of the state, which gets forgotten about a lot, especially the Shreveport area, there's been a huge Democratic takeover in Shreveport. They have an African-American mayor who's doing an amazing job up in Shreveport, Cedric Glover, and that's becoming a new Democratic stronghold for us, which is something that we're not used to. It used to be all the Democratic votes came in south of I-10. And so that'll be, I think that that's going to be really interesting to see what happens. Inevitably, though, one of those, the congressional districts down in the southern part of the state are going to be the ones that are actually going to lose. One of these seats is actually going to end up going away. And, it'll probably be focused right around, Congressman Malazan's district.
Oh, okay. I have one more final question, then I'll turn it back over to David. And the question is about the second district. If you look at the national maps, they always show the second district as a likely turnover. Is that still the case?
Boy, you know what? If the Democrats, if we can't get our craft together to take back that seat, then I don't know what I don't know what's going on. The fact of the matter is that's a D plus 25 district. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so looking at it, absolutely we should be able to take that district back. Now, the issue that we have there is that you've got two camps basically in this race. You have a lot of different Democrats that are actually running in that race. And the problem is that the two main camps, the Juan LaFonta camp and the Cedric Richmond camp, are at odds. Their folks don't talk. They're not friends with each other. There's different churches. It's a whole different realm. And so because of that, there's going to be a lot of hard feelings on whoever ends up going forward. Now, add to that, Cedric Richmond actually received all of the benefits from the DTRIP-C. They came in and put him on the Red to Blue program. And so there's obviously some feeling of being slighted by the Juan LaFonta camp. Now, both of those gentlemen are state representatives. Both of them have some interesting and colorful pasts. Most recently, Cedric Richmond's have all come to the forefront. As soon as somebody sticks their nose out as the leader in any race, all of a sudden all of the focus comes on them. And so there's been a lot of questions about Richmond's past that are all coming to the forefront right now. So the whole question is going to be, can Democrats for the first time ever in New Orleans say bygones, okay, and actually go united into the November election? If not, you know, we're going to see Republican Congressman Cal go on for yet another term. And that is just, that is bad. I mean, Gal voted against, you know, health care. He voted against, I mean, things that, you know, dramatically would affect that district, one of the poorest districts in our state. And he really needed to step up there. But, of course, the Republicans kept a very tight leash on him, and, you know, he voted that way. So I don't know if he's going to be able to overcome that. But he's been bringing money back to the district, and he's been in a lot of photo ops with the president. So,
okay. Yeah, thank you, sir, David.
Staying on that second congressional race, and I know you were talking about some of the hits that have been put out, and I was sent the real CedricRichmond.com.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, that may have been the most in-your-face, hardcore attack site I've ever seen.
Yeah, they didn't mince words, do they?
I mean, it's like it has Cedric Richmond is Two-Face. Batman movie character. I mean, it's raw. How much of an impact is that going to have on the primary?
You know, it goes. That in and of itself will not derail it. But it's the other things. The Times-Picayune has been doing some reports and doing some investigating on Richmond. Those are coming to the forefront. Every reporter now that can't get a microphone in front of him goes to these types of questions about his past, about his relationships that he's had, about this random bar fight that he was in. And because of that, he can't get any other message out. So that's how it's going to be death by a thousand paper cuts for Richmond if this ends up happening. The polling data that we've seen showed, you know, Richmond by 20 points. You know, he was up by 20 points above LaFonta, and that he was just going to be able to skate through. Well, now this calls into question. I haven't seen any updated polling data over the last week once all of these stories have come out. How much will it help? I mean, how much will it actually cause some bit of whiplash in voters to all of a sudden take them back to the frozen dollar bill Jefferson days? You know, that's a big question. That's a large question that's going to be looming over folks' head. Do we really want to go back there?
Yeah, and obviously Joseph Cal then, I guess, if he could somehow spin then Cedric Richmond as the next Bill Jefferson, he could somehow skate through. Yeah. But then the odds of that were so slim when Joseph Cal kept on. Did Joseph Cal ever give serious consideration to switching parties within the first, say, 2 to 3 months of his term so that he could possibly hang on to his seat longer as a Democrat?
You know, I haven't heard any rumors. You would think that he would have to be politically ignorant not to have had those conversations, especially when all of his major funders left him when he actually voted for, I believe it was, the final health care bill. When he voted for that, you know, you saw all of the Republican funders start to ask him for their money back, and all of them start to pull out. So, you know, it is a bizarro world down there with this election. And is he going to be able to capitalize on it? Does he have a strong enough attack dog that's going to be able to bring back all of those bad feelings about Jefferson? Now, mind you, too, if Jefferson were to automatically return and show up on the ballot, I'm not saying he'd lose. So, you know, that can be a double-edged sword that works against Gal.
Yeah. So I just, you know, I had to think about that. Now, looking at some other races, two more congressional races, Don Casey won a pretty big special election back in 2008. I guess it was from February 2008. Then lost the general. Why did that better funded candidate, if you will, go after this? The fellow Merritt McDonald doesn't even have a website, it looks like at this point. Why would there be a better effort there?
Yeah, there's virtually no race there in the sixth, and that is regretful. I'm hoping, and in talking with a lot of individuals, especially up at the JJ dinner, a lot of folks are saying, look, let's see what happens with this go-around. You know, right now with the national political, you know, stories that are running 24 hours a day on all of the cable news channels, that this year Democrats are going to have this huge landslide. First of all, I don't believe it for a minute. I think that Democrats hold the House by at least 10 seats, and I think that we easily hold the Senate as well. But that's because of this hype that we're constantly in. If you look individual race by individual race, you know, Democrats have a very good shot. Anyhow, back to the 6th. The 6th, from what I'm hearing, there are some people that are interested in running. We may even see Cashew come back. The issue is they all felt that this was not the year. They want the state party to get its act back together, and they want it to be at least a level playing field year for them to be able to actually run a campaign.
Yeah, yeah, and then the other congressional seat, and that would be maybe now the seat not worth having after Tim's question, your answer, the Charlie Malanfal seat. Apparently, like, 3 Republicans are looking at it and 1 Democrat. What's going on there?
Republican bloodbath. The Republicans, yeah, it's going to be great to watch. It's another popcorn popper for me. Ravi Sandicetti is a young guy. He's a young attorney. He's the son of 2 doctors, I believe, from the, I guess it would be the eastern part of the district. He has been working his hindquarters off, outraising all of the Republicans combined up until the last reporting period. He's really been doing a good job. Can he win it? I think it all depends on how bloody the Republicans come out of this primary. There is mudslinging, there's whisper campaigns, there are definitely these pockets of individuals, and the question is, any of these Republicans that lose on this primary day, this coming Saturday, the question is, none of them can say that they'll automatically go for the Republican. It's quite possible that they'll end up going for the Democrat because the Republicans have been so ugly against each other that they may very well endorse the Democrat. Because, after all, I mean, Ravi's not running as, I believe him to be a progressive, but, I mean, he's running a very conservative talking points campaign. So, you know, it's quite possible that the Republicans could feel scorned enough that they, in turn, endorse Ravi, and they motivate their people to go to Ravi's camp. And if that happens, you know, that district's back in play. So I haven't written off the 3rd yet. I think it could be interesting, and also another district that, you know, you might want to pay attention to is up north, the Shreveport district. We had a Methodist minister that got into the race at the last minute, David Melville, and I'm telling you what, he could have something. That district was won by 350 votes this last go around by the current incumbent. And I'm telling you what, David Melville, with his connections and being a minister, I think he could do well. And he's a solid, true, tried-and-true Democrat. So I'm really liking what I'm seeing up there.
Yeah, I didn't even know about that race, since I guess that hadn't been a target in the past. Now, one question I did have for you on Ravi's race. Ravi's a Democrat of Indian descent. Bobby Jindal is a Indian descent Republican. What's the differences there and the similarities running from the Democratic perspective and the Republican perspective, being a minority in the state?
Well, you know, I would like to think. I mean, I've only been in Louisiana for 10 years. I'm originally from Ohio. And I got to tell you, and I think that we ignore it at our own peril. The racism that we still have down here is huge. And it's only exacerbated by, I think, the cliquishness and the segregation orders that were still underneath in our schools, yada, yada. So that, in the Democratic Party, I would like to say that we have more of our craft together. But to say that we are completely colorblind inside the Democratic Party, I don't think is the case. I wish it were, and I hope that we will get there. But in Ravi's case, you know, the key to him winning is if he can shake everybody's hand, because the fact of the matter is he's a very engaging person that I think could go incredibly, you know, it could go well for him, you know. And also, too, Bobby Jindal broke down a barrier. he broke down a barrier, whether we like it or not, and I think that he's our worst governor we've ever had, and that's saying a lot for Louisiana. Because of that, you know, he has broken down some barriers that ultimately Ravi may end up being able to celebrate.
Yeah, well, maybe Governor Jindal will write a classic like "You Are My Sunshine" and move up the for you. But you know, anyway, I just trying to find out, because sometimes I see differences. It's like if a candidate is of color and they're Republican, a lot of times some more conservative voters might say, "Oh, that guy's safe. He's one of us." But if they're a Democrat, they won't give them the same chance. And I
right.
see that at times. And it's kind of a little bit of a double standard.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Stephen, it's been great having you on, and you've been super informative, and we can tell that the Daily Kingfish is in good hands for the 2008 cycle.
We sure hope so. And next year, because we're crazy here in Louisiana, next year all of our state offices are up. So from governor down to dog catcher, all the races are up. So it'll be an interesting year for Kingfish next year for sure.
Yeah, for the 2010 cycle and then the 11, I went back in time. I think you said 2008 a few times in my mind. Went back to the good old days. But Stephen, we're going to have you back on before the general once all these races are set.
I would love to.
Okay, thank you again.
Thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you guys
sir.
So much. Have a great night.
You too. Well, I guess it's getting close to the end of the show, but we have a little bit of time, and I guess we can pick back up since I know, Catherine, you've been wanting to talk about this. The sore loser law and Regina Thomas trying to join back up and run against John Barrow as a write-in candidate. Catherine, give us your thought on that first.
Well, I think Ms. Thomas needs some some work in the math department. If you recall, she had some math issues on her website a while ago too, and I looked at the math on the primary, and she lost by about 5,000 votes. So she's got to get all, like, I just don't know how she thinks she can possibly win as a write-in. And she can't be an official write-in. She actually, I think, officially couldn't even win. Even if people wrote her in as a non-official write-in candidate, even if she got all the votes, she wouldn't win.
Yeah, I mean,
if I understand the law properly.
Yeah, and you can tell she's going to be the kind of person she's going to run again and again and just not give it up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of sad because, I mean, you see these folks that do this, and they never won anything. But, I mean,
well,
this is a lady that somehow attained the office of state senate. I mean, you know, you're kind of
Well, I want to say, I don't have any problem with her running in the primary. I think, you know, there are people, I mean, she got 42% of the vote. So there are people who are looking for an alternative to John Barrow. There's, and I don't have any problem with, you know, running a primary campaign against someone who you think is not serving their constituents well or is not voting properly in Congress. I got no problem with that. That's, you know, that's the way we work in this country. But once you lose, because if she really ramps this up and people don't vote for John Barrow, then we're going to lose. I don't think we're going to. But what that ultimately would mean is losing the seat, in my opinion.
Yes.
I don't think there's any way that she can win.
Yeah, and really, I mean, this is the last time that seat's going to be configured in that way.
Yep.
And, you know, 2012 is going to be a different seat, and it's going to go one of two ways. One, they say, look, we can't get this guy. We're going to create these districts. We just got to keep that Democratic. And probably they can then give John Barrow some safety, and then he can probably be a little more of who he wants to be, which I think then maybe Democrats, the heat will come off of him some, because I think his voting record might be a little more progressive at that point, or they're going to go after him so viscerally to get rid of him, then, you know, they'll just slice and dice his district, and he'll be out just by the Republicans doing, and then Regina Thomas wouldn't win the seat in the general anyway, and so I think it's going to go one of those two ways. I don't think there's a way the Republicans can do the math to where they keep it this pseudo-competitive seat that they can go after time after time.
You know, they've got to do something with the votes. You know, they somehow put Athens back in that district or what have you to get rid of those Democratic votes to then make something else more Republican that they need. You know, probably like a part of a Gwinnett district that's going to then begin to trend more and more Democratic down the line. Well, I think we've got time for one more quick topic, and that would be the Kentucky Senate race. Rand Paul speaks, Rand Paul falls. A new poll showed Jack Conway with a one-point lead, 42-41, but a huge number of undecideds. Tim, what do you think?
Polled by an outfit named Brown Research from New Jersey. The same week Rasmussen had Paul up 9 points. I hate to be the killjoy here, but I think Rasmussen's right.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to look at the methodology and see where did they poll the state accurately. I think Stephen brought up a good point. Like, it appears that one poll in Florida looked at the general election electorate and put those numbers on the primary. That's bad methodology. It'd be interesting to see what each of these two polls did. But, I mean, it makes sense that Rand Paul says something dumb, and his numbers fall. I mean,
yeah, but all the other polls in this race are showing Paul with between a 5 and a 10-point lead, and then all of a sudden here comes this one poll that says something totally different. Until another poll substantiates it, wouldn't you at least have to say that it would be considered an outlier?
It could be an outlier. The one thing is a 5-point race, you know, like some of the other polls you're saying, that looks close compared to, say, the Arkansas Senate race or the Alabama governor's
race.
So that becomes a competitive playing target.
This race is in play.
What it says to me is that the Democrats in Kentucky need to get their act together and make sure everybody gets out to vote.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the best takeover opportunities for the Democrats, and this is the kind of thing that keeps the Senate secure. Well, I think it's been a great Kudzu Vine. I want to thank y'all, and definitely want to thank Stephen from the Daily Kingfish. And next week, Tim, do you want to preview who our special guest will be?
Ah, yes, Mr. David Wissing from the Hedgehog Report National Blog. We're very much looking forward to having David with us to talk about Maryland politics and the national blogosphere.
Yep.
Been
the Kudzu Vine.
Good night, everybody.
Good
night. We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the law.